Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Ukraine Calling. I'm Oksana Smerechuk for Hromadske Radio in Kyiv. Here you can listen to our feature interview, hosted by Bohdan Mihailo, followed by some new music from Ukraine. Bohdan talks with Andy Hunda, the immigrant boy from London whose country didn't even exist on a map, and now president of the American Chamber of Commerce in Kyiv.
Well, I'm very pleased to have as my guest on this week's Ukraine Calling program, Andriy, or Andy, as he's known here, Andy Hunda, who, as he'll tell us himself, originally is from Britain, but he is the president of the American Chamber of Commerce in Kyiv. So welcome to the program.
Thank you, Bohdan. It's always good to see you. And Happy New Year.
Thank you. Znovim rokom. And to all our listeners as well. Let's begin by introducing the American Chamber of Commerce to those maybe in the States or in Canada or elsewhere. What is the role of such chambers, not just in Ukraine, but generally outside their own country of origin?
Well, the American Chamber of Commerce in Ukraine was launched 25 years ago in 1992. That's the year when the embassy started opening up in Kyiv after the collapse of the Soviet Union in 91 and the referendum in December. So in 92, the embassies opened up, and that's when the big businesses started turning up and opening offices in Ukraine. And the companies got together and they created a chamber of commerce that unites the business. And that's pretty much what we've been doing for the last 25 years. We do three things. Number one is the B2G, being the voice of business to government. So it's getting the voice across to the decision makers, to the opinion leaders. And how do we do that? Starting from the very top, with the presidential administration, I'm a member of the National Reforms Council. So I'm sat at the table with the president, the prime minister, the cabinet of ministers, and I'm there getting the voice of business across. Why the American Chamber of Commerce? Because over the last quarter of a century, the chamber has established itself as a credible and an unbiased voice. So we're not lobbying any one individual or any one company or any one sector.
Okay, Andriy, before you move on, give us an idea of the size of the chamber. How many companies do you have? How many did you roughly start with, and how have you grown over the years?
Well, we've grown significantly over the last 25 years. Today, we have 600 members and affiliated parties. So this is a substantial organization, and we benchmark with our colleagues across Europe. So it's something, you know, what we've done over the last, my predecessors, with the support of the U.S. Embassy and the support of all the members that believed in Ukraine 25 years ago and have been here ever since, you know, continuing to invest, creating jobs and paying taxes.
So you've got banks represented, IT companies, I presume, more and more.
Across the board.
Agriculture.
Agriculture, banks, healthcare, IT, all across the board, sort of law firms, consulting firms, the big investors, the food and beverage is a big industry, generally across the board. You know, automobile, we have a new committee now that focuses purely on aerospace and technology. And some of these, you know, non-specific sectors or non-traditional sectors. And we're seeing, you know, interest in these now.
And who are the other big players as far as chambers of commerce are concerned? The Brits, I suppose, with the French, the Italians?
Well, we're often asked, why is a Brit running the American Chamber of Commerce in Ukraine? And the answer is simple, because we have an American running the British Chamber of Commerce.
I was going to get to that.
We are quite an eclectic mix. So, you know, we have a percentage of the members are American, but also we have the large European and Ukrainian companies. I think on the market there are the traditional, there's the local Ukrainian business associations. We have the Ukrainian Chamber of Commerce. We have some of the traditional business organizations that have been around, like the the Union of Industrialists and Entrepreneurs. We have the Ukrainian Business Association. There's a new Ukrainian Spilka Ukrainskich Pidpriemtsiv. It's like a union of Ukrainian entrepreneurs. And then we have all the other countries. We have the Europeans, the European Business Association, the French Chamber of Commerce.
Well, who are the other big players?
The big players are, you know, we and our European counterparts are probably the biggest ones. And I think it's not all about size. It's all about having the credibility and also having the clout to get deliver for your members. So it's pretty much, you know, we have been here the longest for 25 years. And together with our European colleagues, and we sort of do try and work together, you know, promoting and making Ukraine a better and easier place where to do business.
All right. Well, we'll talk about the environment and conditions for doing business and investing in a while. But let's just pause and talk a little bit about yourself. So you've mentioned you're from Britain originally. I, like myself, you grew up in the Ukrainian community there. But tell us about your education. How did you end up in Ukraine?
Well, as you say, I was born in London in the UK. And when I was eight, I used to go to school like a son of immigrant parents. And one day the teacher called us out, or called all the children out to the blackboard. We had a blackboard at the time, and there were two maps. And there was a map of the UK and a map of the world. And one day the teacher says, OK, children, you know, today we're going to do geography. And I would like, you know, you to show us which part of the UK your parents are originally from. And, you know, many children, or most children, went up to the map of the UK and they said that my parents are from Liverpool or from Manchester. And I, like the other children of immigrants, went to the map of the world. And I sort of proudly stood there and I said, you know, my parents are from a country called Ukraine. And then I looked on the map and the country wasn't there. So the children ended up ridiculing me, saying, you know, you come from a country that's not on the map. And I tried to convince them that, no, this country's there, you know, almost with tears in my eyes, that, you know, my parents are from Ukraine. But they said the country's not on the map.
But at least you had a name like Hunder, which wasn't that difficult to pronounce. With me, it was Nahajlo with a J, so it was Nahajlo for everybody, you know.
Yes. But I think it just shows, you know, how things have evolved over the last quarter of a century. You know, today, I think that no one from my former classmates or my teacher would struggle in finding Ukraine on the map today. You know, an independent state, a biggest country in Europe. So I think that's something that my roots were there.
So you also, I know you're fluent in Ukrainian. Obviously, it's very important for you to liaise with the government and the local business community, etc. Is that simply from the Ukrainian Saturday schools that we went to? Or?
It was my parents. It was Saturday schools. But then when I was 13, I made a decision and I went to Rome to study in the minor seminary. There was Ukrainian minor seminary at the time in Rome. And at the age of 13, I decided that that's what I want to do. And today I still see that one of the best decisions of my life. I loved it. I was there for 10 years. I was in the minor seminary. Then I went on to university. I did philosophy and theology. So I have many friends that went on to the priesthoods. You know, some of my friends have gone on to become bishops. And I think it's still something that's, you know, I still feel very, very close in my heart. And I think it's an amazing organization. And I think, you know, what the Ukrainian Catholic Church has done, and I'm still quite close with the Ukrainian Catholic University.
But so it gave you the patriotism and the kind of moral, ethical backbone.
Well, it gave me a lot of the contacts also, and the roots and the contacts. So already when I was in Rome, we had people coming over from Ukraine. And there was once a TV crew that came over, and I managed to get them to film the Holy Father, JP2, John Paul, or Saint John Paul II now. And then I kept these contacts. And one day, one of the TV crews, they called me back in London. They said, you know, we're launching a TV program in Ukraine. You know, we need someone who speaks a bit of English. Come over to Kiev, and we need someone to help with producing it. So I packed my bag, you know, at the age of, I think I was 25 at the time, and I came to Kiev. This was 1996, and I pretty much, on and off, I've stayed since. So that's where I started, and then I went on to work, and I launched the public relations department at the largest mobile telephone operator, which is now Vodafone in Ukraine. You know, I met my wife, we got married, we settled down, we had a family here, sort of on and off, we've been in Ukraine now for nearly two decades.
And your parents, I presume, that time they were there, alive. I don't know if they still are, but they must have been quite happy that their son had returned to Batyushchina, to the homeland.
Absolutely. I think, you know, when I was growing up, when we were growing up, you know, we had this dream of seeing Ukraine. because at the time with the Iron Curtain, we couldn't travel. You know, there were no the possibility to travel just wasn't there. So, you know, I grew up with this dream of one day, you know, visiting and one day living in Ukraine. And in 91, when Ukraine became independent, this became a reality. And then when I had the opportunity in 96, I took that opportunity and I haven't looked back since.
But during those years, 96 to 2018, you must have, like all of us, experienced ups and downs and peaks of satisfaction that things are beginning to go the right way, and yet moments of disappointment. So in those years, looking back, say the last 20 years, what were the most memorable years for you personally?
I think, you know, it's been a bit of a turbulent ride. You know, the seatbelts are still on. But I think the moments of euphoria, I remember 2004, the Orange Revolution. That's something I'll probably remember for the rest of my life. And, you know, my son still, he remembers that. And his love to politics is because of the what he lived through during the Orange Revolution in 2004 in Ukraine. I think, you know, the Maidan is something that will always, you know, be with us in our hearts and in our minds. But also, you know, we see on a daily basis sort of living in the country. And it's the reality of sort of living and for the business community to do business here.
Well, you deal with investments, but clearly your parents invested in your future, in your education by sending you to Rome. And if I can betray a secret, your son is one of the few Ukrainians, or I don't know if others have been there, that has been educated in Eton. I'm correct.
He finished. He was there for 5 years, so he's gone on to university now. So I think it is. You know, I'm very grateful to my parents for giving me, you know, a sense of understanding of my roots. You know, where we stem from. You know, our roots. And I think, you know, it's, you know, without a past, there is no future. And I'm very, very happy to have, you know, had that opportunity to have my dream, you know, to actually live in Ukraine, to have that materialized.
I'm talking to Andy Hunder, the president of the American Chamber of Commerce. Andy, before we focus on the present situation and the work of the chamber again, you were also for some time the director of the Ukrainian Institute in London. Briefly, what did that involve?
Well, this was Bishop Boris Gudziak. In 2010, he asked me to take over the institute because the director at the time, Marta Yankala, she moved over to Cambridge University, and I took it over on a pro bono basis. And this is a wonderful building in Holland Park, one of the most prestigious boroughs of London. And this was a building bought in 1979 by Patriarch Joseph Slipy. And this is an affiliate of the Ukrainian Catholic University. And Bishop Boris asked me to take over the institute. And this was a primal sort of focus point of all things Ukrainian in London. And we held, it was Professor Cimbalisti was the first director, then Marta Yankala, and then I came on board after Marta. And it was to bring Ukrainian culture, literature together. And there was a literary club, a book club. And then especially in 2014, I was spending a lot of time, 2013 and 14, and I was spending a lot of time in London at the time with my family. And there was no Ukrainian voice in English that was getting Ukraine's message across. So at its peak in February 2014, I was asked to do 7 live interviews in one day on channels like TV channels like CNN, BBC, Sky, Al Jazeera. And this was an opportunity to get Ukraine's voice across in English to the international media to understand what was going on.
And you did a very good job. I saw quite a few of those interviews and I was very proud that we had such a capable spokesperson then. So now moving back to Ukraine, let's talk a little bit about the climate. There were great hopes that after the revolution of dignity, after the ouster of the former president and the cleaning of the stables, as it were, from the corruption that existed, that we would have much more auspicious conditions for investments, for attracting business from abroad. Certainly, there's been progress. You've just written a piece in one of the business publications here, looking at prospects, taking stock of the situation. Would you care to just summarise how you see the lay of the land at the beginning of 2018, bearing in mind the challenges, where we've come from, and looking ahead?
Sure. I mean, if we look at the big picture, 25 years, I think 2017, 2018, what we have is, this is probably the most open and accessible government that the business community has had in the last quarter of a century. What has changed? The people have changed and technology has changed. I can write to many ministers on Facebook and usually within 60 minutes get some sort of response. So I think the technology also helps that. And they are, the ministers and the government officials are much more accessible, much more open. They are ready to listen. Sometimes they hear. And it's that is a great change. And we're very grateful to the government for this major shift. And it is almost a tectonic shift in the way they communicate with the business community. Some things haven't changed. I think...
Can I ask you a question? Well, the president is a businessman. The fact that he's a businessman, has that made it easier to do business with a businessman or
Well, we've seen some very tangible examples with... one of the biggest issues the business community, the exporters, mainly the grain traders have had over the last 20 years, is to refund the value-added tax on your exports of grain, sunflower, or wheat, or whatever. And on the 1st of April, it was actually April Fool's Day, President Poroshenko signed a new decree whereby all value-added tax returns were done online in a transparent and systemic way. So that was very tangible, and that was one of the biggest positive steps forwards for the business community in Ukraine. We also had, we have regular meetings with the business community, with the president and the prime minister. And during one of these meetings, I said to the president, I said, Mr. President, Mr. Prime Minister, the worst possible image for the business, any businessman, any shareholder, any investor, any employee, is when you have men in balaclavas and Kalashnikovs sent in, that these are law enforcement agents, knocking down the door of your office, you know, looking for a piece of paper from the tax office. And, that is the worst possible way how to scare investors off. And after these meetings, the president and the prime minister, they heard us, and they signed a law stopping these, you know, raids on business with men in masks and Kalashnikovs. So, you know, things are changing. Still, you know, we do regular surveys of the business community. And so, you know, it's understanding the business that are working here every day, what they encounter. Corruption is still an issue.
Corruption and I guess the delays in reforming the legal system to ensure that not only the checks and balances are there, but that due process is observed.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, we had a very strong statement from the International Monetary Fund yesterday about the anti-corruption court. And that it's important to have the anti-corruption court in place, which will resolve, this is a cancer that's still killing the country. And I think in the words of Rex Tillerson, no purpose for Ukraine to fight for its body in Donbass if it loses its soul to corruption. And I think that's something which we saw from Joe Biden. In his latest book, Joe Biden, Promise Me Dad, he mentions how personally involved he was with working with President Poroshenko and Prime Minister Yatsenyuk at the time in terms of fighting corruption. But this is still this cancer that has not been, that's still there and that is still, you know, creating.
Is it merely a cancer, or do you feel that there's still this very strong opposition from the oligarchical setup, vested interests that are being defended?
Oh, the vested interests are there, absolutely. I think we are seeing this clash between the old and the new. You know, new genuine people that have come into, you know, given up good jobs in the private sector. They've gone into government with a dream to change the country for their children to live in a better land, a land, you know, free where they can be educated here, they could work here, and they could live here. But then we still see that, you know, old habits die hard. And there are still interests that don't want to change the system because they don't know how to make, a living working in a free environment, a competitive environment. But they are used to the old ways of, you know, you have access to power, and that means you have access to the cash.
Looking ahead, what are your main objectives, the chambers, for the coming year? What areas are you going to be focusing or continuing to focus on?
Well, we have very specific areas. I think, for the business community, I think reducing the levels of corruption is still something that remains top of the list. The legislative framework, I think that's what the investors want to see in terms of investor protection rights. So if you own land on which you build a factory or an office center or anything, you know, you want to be sure that in a court you can prove that is yours. And this year is quite special, or specific rather. Why? Because it's a pre-election year. And we already are seeing that a lot of the focus is going to be on the elections in 2019, first quarter presidential elections and fourth quarter parliamentary elections. So
I think the manoeuvring started even last year in the second half.
Much, yes.
Tell me, does the chamber have a position on privatization of the land?
We have a position on privatization. Per se. I think in terms of the state-owned enterprises, there are 3,500 state-owned enterprises in Ukraine today. In terms of it's having a privatization that is transparent, threefold transparency. Transparency of the assets that's being sold or put up for sale, so understanding how toxic it may or may not be. A transparency of the process, so who is being allowed into the data room and for what reasons are they there just to, you know, mess the whole thing up. And thirdly, a transparency of the buyer. Is it an offshore company from Cyprus or BVI, which is, you know, owned by Mr. X, who, you know, everybody knows? So that on the privatization, absolutely, it's one of our priorities of the state-owned enterprises.
And tell us, obviously, the change in the presidential administration in the United States was a big story, still is a big story. And, of course, there were fears here about how that would impact politically, and particularly as far as support for Ukraine and its... And it's, what shall we say, not confrontation in the war that Russia has launched against them. But in terms of business and the business climate, is there more of the same? Are people investing? Are they coming here? Or has the change of the administration in Washington in any way affected the American companies' willingness to come here?
Well, I remember the morning, the day after the elections, and this was like 6-7 o'clock in the morning here in an America House. Everyone got together and we saw the results. And I think it was a surprise. We were not expecting maybe, you know, for where... by, you know, what would the Trump administration bring? I think what we have seen is, especially when Trump has met with President Poroshenko in the last meeting, the one thing he said the business is coming to Ukraine. This is Trump's words. And he says to Poroshenko, take good care of them. He says, take good care of them. So we are seeing, I mean, I see from my schedule in terms of even in January, we have, you know, numerous companies looking. They're flying in. They're flying in from the US. They're flying in from their regional headquarters in Europe, across Europe. And they're looking. I think we're still not at that stage. We're not signing contracts and drinking champagne yet. But I think it's a good stage where we're looking. It's a very important stage where to be at. So I think it's taking it from there. And I think, you know, as you mentioned in the article, and what I did write is, you know, it's no good, you know, Ukraine promoting or trying to promote all kinds of investment shows and investment promotion materials without really being serious about the fight of corruption. So now I think that's really the crux of the issue, which Ukraine can show that it's serious about corruption. And I think that's what investors do want to see.
Okay, and finally, because we are running out of time, if there's, well, two things. If there was something that could be achieved this year with the help of your chamber, what would that be that you would be very pleased about within the realm of the tangible, you know, the realistic?
Well, I think it's, you know, we have a long list, you know, starting from the International Monetary Fund cooperation continuation. I think that's essential. Repatriation of dividends, privatization. But I think, you know, the anti-corruption court is extremely important because that will send the signal that Ukraine is serious about fighting corruption.
And is there a message you would like to pass on to listeners, perhaps people in the business sector listening out there who perhaps are hesitant to come and invest because, you know, there's a war going on, they don't always read a good press about Ukraine. What would your message be?
Well, I've been here for on and off 2 decades. It's a country that I absolutely love, and I think I've seen so many great stories happening here and great opportunities. I think it's very different when you're sat in the US or in Europe looking at Ukraine through a TV monitor on a TV station. But when we see that people do come here and they come in our office and we're on the 15th floor and we have a nice view and they say, wow, this is a very different Ukraine to what I imagined sitting back in my home or my office. So I would say to these people, come to Ukraine, have a look, and you'll be surprised.
Andy, thank you very much. I've been speaking to the president of the American Chamber of Commerce here in Ukraine, Andy Hunter. Thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you, Bohdan.
And now for some music, here's a dreamy song for you for midwinter. It's about following the path of a bird, looking for comfort in blue meadows. Vocalist Varvara Chaikovska sings this, while Pavlo Vozdetsky plays keyboards. They're from a Kyiv group called The Velvet Sun, and their song's called Stikhii, which means the elements. The classical elements of ancient Greece: earth, water, air, fire, and the ether. Enjoy!
Спішаю за шляхом пташиним і чомусь прокидаюсь під стуки дощу, і чомусь я хвилююсь, як сумлять долини. Заспокоєння не хочу, заспокоєння не хочу, заспокоєння не хочу. Допомоги проситиму в синіх дібровах, допомоги проситиму в теплих морях. У вітрів запитаюся, де ж та дорога, що зніме мене з якоря, що зніме мене з якоря, що зніме мене з якоря. Небесних крилах таємничі знання, як батьки волелюбні стоять на порозі, щоб взяти за руку і вести навмання. Не бажаю вважати себе за людину, що не знає, навіщо з'явилась на світ. Не бажаю тримати свою душу віднині у тенетах двомірних літ, у тенетах двомірних літ, у тенетах двомірних літ. І тому ми слухаємось вухами лісу, і тому ми вдивляємось очами гір, і тому ми співаємо голосом висі. Найвідкритий той вищий зір, найвідкритий той вищий зір, найвідкритий той вищий зір. Допомоги проситиму в синіх дірах. твердій бровах допомоги проситиму в теплих морях. У вітрі я запитаюся, де ж та дорога, що зніме мене з я, що зніме мене, що зніме мене з я коря, 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 з я ко, з я коря.
Next week, Bohdan Mihailo will be hosting the show, and we'll be back with more conversation with people who make things happen in Ukraine. So tune in again for a new edition of Ukraine Calling. And of course, we'd be happy to receive any feedback from you. Write to us at ukrainecalling@hromadskeradio.org. This is Oksana Smerechuk in Kyiv. Thanks so much for listening.